Lawyer Daggett as well. The letter ran thus. My dear Matty, I trust you will find the enclosed document satisfactory. I wish you would leave these matters entirely to me, or, at the very least, do me the courtesy of consulting me before making such agreements. I am not scolding you, but I am saying that your headstrong ways will lead you into a tight corner one day. That said, I shall concede that you seem to have driven a fair bargain with the good colonel. I know nothing of the man, of his probity or lack of same, but I should not give him this release until I had the money in hand. I feel sure you have taken his measure. Your mother is bearing up well, but is much concerned for you and anxious for your speedy return. I join her in that. Fort Smith is no place for a young girl alone, not even a Matty. Little Frank is down with an earache, but of course that is no serious matter. Victoria is in fine fettle. It was thought best that she not attend the funeral. Mr. MacDonald is still away on his deer hunt, and Mr. Hardy was pressed into service to preach Frank's funeral, taking his text from the 16th chapter of John, I have overcome the world. I know Mr. Hardy is not much esteemed for his social qualities, but he is a good man in his way, and no one can say he is not a diligent student of the Scriptures. The Danville Lodge had charge of the graveside service. Needless to say, the whole community is shocked and grieved. Frank was a rich man and friends. Your mother and I shall expect you to take the first train home when you have concluded your business with the colonel. You will wire me immediately with regard to that, and we shall look for you in a day or two. I should like to get Frank's estate through probate without delay, and there are important matters to be discussed with you. Your mother will make no decision without you, nor will she sign anything, not even common receipts. Hence, nothing can move forward until you are here. You are her strong right arm now, Matty, and you are a pearl of great price to me, but there are times when you are an almighty trial to those who love you. Hurry home. I am, thine truly, Jane O'Daggett. If you want anything done right, you will have to see to it yourself every time. I do not know to this day why they let a wool-hatted crank like Owen Hardy preach the service. Knowing the gospel and preaching it are two different things. A Baptist or even a Campbellite would have been better than him. If I had been home, I would never have permitted it, but I could not be in two places at once. Stonehill was not in a quarrelsome mood that morning. Indeed, he was not snorting or blowing at all, but rather in a sad, baffled state, like that of some elderly lunatics I have known. Let me say quickly that the man was not crazy. My comparison is not a kind one, and I would not use it except to emphasize his changed manner. He wanted to write me a check, and I know it would have been all right, but I did not wish to take the affair this far and risk being rooked, so I insisted on cash money. He said he would have it as soon as his bank opened. I said, "You do not look well." He said, "My malaria is making its annual visitation." "I've been a little under the weather myself. Have you taken any quinine?" "Yes, I am stuffed to the gills with the Peruvian bark. My ears are fairly ringing from it. It does not take hold as it once did." "I hope you will be feeling better." "Thank you. It will pass." I returned to the Monarch to get the breakfast I had paid for. LeBeef the Texan was at the table, shaved and clean. I supposed he could do nothing with the cowlick. It is likely that he cultivated it. He was a vain and cocky devil. Mrs. Floyd asked me if the letter had come. I said, "Yes, I have the letter. It came this morning." "Then I know you are relieved," said she. Then, to the others, "She has been awaiting that letter for days." Then back to me, "Have you seen the colonel yet?" "I have just now come from that place," I replied. LeBeef said, "What colonel is that?" Why, Colonel Stockhill, the stone trader, said Mrs. Floyd. I broke in to say, it is a personal matter. Did you get your settlement? Said Mrs. Floyd, who could no more keep her mouth closed than can a yellow catfish.
What kind of stones? Said LaBeef.
It is Stonehill the stock trader, said I. He does not deal in stones, but livestock. I sold him some half-starved ponies that came up from Texas. There's nothing more to it.
You're powerful young for a horse trader, said LaBeef.
Not to mention your sex.
Yes, and you are powerful free for a stranger, said I.
Her father bought the ponies from the colonel just before he was killed, said Mrs. Floyd. Little Mattie here stood him down and made him take them back at a good price.
Right around 9 o'clock, I went to the stock barn and exchanged my release for $325 in greenbacks. I had held longer amounts in my hand, but this money, I fancied, would be pleasing out of proportion to its face value. But no, it was only $325 in paper, and the moment fell short of my expectations. I noted the mild disappointment and made no more of it than that. Perhaps I was affected by Stonehill's downcast state. I said,
Well, you have kept your end of the agreement, and I have kept mine.
That is so, said he. I have paid you for a horse I do not possess, and I have bought back a string of useless ponies I cannot sell again.
You're forgetting the gray horse.
Crowbait.
You were looking at the thing in the wrong light.
I am looking at it in the light of God's eternal truth.
I hope you do not think I have wronged you in any way.
No, not at all, said he. My fortunes have been remarkably consistent since I came to the bear state. This is but another episode, and a relatively happy one. I was told this city was to be the Chicago of the Southwest. Well, my little friend, it is not the Chicago of the Southwest. I cannot rightly say what it is. I would gladly take pen in hand and write a thick book on my misadventures here, but dare not for fear of being called a lying romancer.
The malaria is making you feel bad. You will soon find a buyer for the ponies.
I have a tentative offer of $10 per head from the Fitzer Soap Works of Little Rock.
It would be a shame to destroy such spirited horse flesh and render it into soap.
So it would. I am confident the deal will fall through.
I will return later for my saddle.
Very good.
I went to the Chinaman's store and bought an apple and asked Lee if Rooster was in. He said he was still in bed. I had never seen anyone in bed at 10 o'clock in the morning who was not sick, but that was where he was. He stirred as I came through the curtain. His weight was such that the bunk was bowed in the middle almost to the floor. It looked like he was in a hammock. He was fully clothed under the covers. The brindle cat, Sterling Price, was curled up on the foot of the bed. Rooster coughed and spit on the floor and rolled a cigarette and lit it and coughed some more. He asked me to bring him some coffee, and I got a cup and took the Eureka pot from the stove and did this. As he drank, little brown drops of coffee clung to his mustache like dew. Men will live like billy goats if they are let alone. He seemed in no way surprised to see me, so I took the same line and stood with my back to the stove and ate my apple. I said, You need some more slats in that bed.
I know, said he. That's the trouble. There's no slats in it at all. It is some kind of a damn Chinese rope bed. I would love to burn it up.
It's not good for your back sleeping like that.
You're right about that, too. A man my age ought to have a good bed if he has nothing else. How does the weather stand out there?
The wind is right sharp, said I. It's clouding up some in the east.
We're in for snow or I miss my guess. Did you see the moon last night?
I do not look for snow today.
Where have you been, baby sister? I looked for you to come back. then give up on you. I figured you went on home.
No, I've been at the Monarch boarding house right along. I've been down with something very nearly like the croup.
Have you now? The general and me'll thank you not to pass it on.
I've about got it whipped. I thought you might inquire about me or look in on me while I was laid up.
What made you think that?
I had no reason, except I did not know anybody else in town.
Maybe you thought I was a preacher that goes around paying calls on all the sick people.
No, I did not think that.
Preachers don't have nothing better to do. I had my work to see to. Your government marshals don't have time to be paying a lot of social calls. They are too busy trying to follow all the regulations laid down by Uncle Sam. That gentleman will have his fee sheets just and correct, or he does not pay.
Yes, I see they are keeping you busy.
What you see is an honest man who has worked half the night on his fee sheets. It is the devil's own work, and Potter is not here to help me. If you don't have no schooling, you are up against it in this country, sis. That's the way of it. No, sir, that man has no chance anymore. No matter if he has got sand in his craw, others will push him aside. Little thin fellas that have won spelling bees back home.
I said, I read in the paper where they're going to hang the Horton man.
There's nothing else they could do, said he. It is too bad they cannot hang him 3 or 4 times.
When will they do the job?
It is set for January, but Lawyer Gowdy is going to Washington City to see if President Hayes will not commute the sentence. The boy's mother, Minnie Wharton, has got some property, and Gowdy will not let up until he has got it all.
Will the president let him off, do you think?
It is hard to say. What does the president know about it? I will tell you, nothing. Gowdy will claim the boy was provoked, and he will tell a bushel of lies about me. I should have put a ball in that boy's head instead of his collarbone. I was thinking about my fee. You will sometimes let money interfere with your notion of what is right.
I took the folded currency from my pocket and held it up, showing it to him.
Rooster said, "By God, look at it. How much have you got there? If I had your hand, I would throw mine in."
You did not believe I would come back, did you?
Well, I didn't know. You're a hard one to figure.
Are you still game?
Game? I was born game, sis, and hope to die in that condition.
How long will it take you to get ready to go?
Ready to go where?
To the territory, to the Indian territory, to get Tom Cheney, the man who shot my father, Frank Ross, in front of the Monarch boarding house.
I forget just what our agreement was.
I offered to pay you $50 for the job.
Yes, I remember that now. What did I say to that?
You said your price was $100.
That's right, I remember now. Well, that's what it still is. It will take $100.
All right.
Count it out there on the table.
First, I will have an understanding. Can we leave for the territory this afternoon? He sat up in the bed.
Wait, he said. Hold up. You are not going.
That is part of it, said I.
It cannot be done.
And why not? You have misjudged me if you think I am silly enough to give you $100 and watch you ride away. No, I will see the thing done myself.
I am a bonded U.S. Marshal.
That weighs but little with me. R.B. Hayes is the U.S. President, and they say he stole Tilden out.
You never said anything about this. I cannot go up against Ned Pepper's band and try to look after a baby at one and the same time.
I am not a baby. You will not have to worry about me.
You will slow me down and get in my way. If you want this job done and done fast, you will let me do it my own way. Credit me for knowing my business. What if you get sick again? I can do nothing for you. First you thought I was a preacher, and now you think I am a doctor with a flat stick who will look at your tongue every few minutes.
I will not slow you down. I am a good enough rider.
I will not be stopping at boarding houses with warm beds and plates of hot grub on the table. It'll be traveling fast and eating light. What little sleeping is done will take place on the ground.
I have slept out at night. Papa took me and little Frank coon hunting last summer on the Petit Jean.
Coon hunting?
We were out in the woods all night. We sat around a big fire, and Yarnell told ghost stories. We had a good time.
Blast coon hunting. This ain't no coon hunt. It don't come in 40 miles of being a coon hunt.
It is the same idea as a coon hunt. You are just trying to make your work sound harder than it is.
Forget coon hunting. I'm telling you that where I am going is no place for a shirt-tailed kid.
That is what they said about coon hunting. Also Fort Smith. Yet, here I am.
The first night out, you will be taken on and crying for your mama.
I said, I have left off crying and giggling as well. Now, make up your mind. I don't care anything for all this talk. You told me what your price for the job was, and I have come up with it. Here is the money. I aim to get Tom Chaney, and if you are not game, I will find somebody who is game. All I have heard out of you so far is talk. I know you can drink whiskey, and I have seen you kill a gray rat. All the rest has been talk. They told me you had grit, and that is why I came to you. I am not paying for talk. I can get all the talk I need and more at the Monarch boarding house.
I ought to slap your face.
How do you propose to do it from that hog wallow you were sunk in? I would be ashamed of myself living in this filth. If I smelled as bad as you, I would not live in a city. I would go live on top of Magazine Mountain, where I would offend no one but rabbits and salamanders. He came up out of the bunk and spilt his coffee and sent the cat squalling. He reached for me, but I moved quickly out of his grasp and got behind the stove. I picked up a handful of expense sheets from the table and jerked up a stove lid with a lifter. I held them over the flames. You had best stand back if these papers have any value to you, said I. He said,
put them sheets back on the table.
I said, not until you stand back. He moved back a step or two. That is not far enough, said I. Go back to the bed. Lee looked in through the curtain. Rooster sat down on the edge of the bed. I put the lid back on the stove and returned the papers to the table.
Get back to your store, said Rooster, turning his anger on Lee. Everything is all right. Sis and me is making medicine.
I said, all right, what have you to say? I am in a hurry.
He said, I cannot leave town until them fee sheets is done. Done and accepted.
I sat down at the table and worked over the sheets for better than an hour. There was nothing hard about it. Only I had to rub out most of what he had already done. The forms were ruled with places for the entries and figures, but Rooster's handwriting was so large and misguided that it covered the lines and wandered up and down into places where it should not have gone. As a consequence, the written entries did not always match up with the money figures. What he called his vouchers were scribbled notes, mostly undated. They ran such as this: Rations for Cecil, $1.25, and Important Words with Red, 65 cents. Red who? I inquired. They're not going to pay for this kind of thing.
That's Society Red, said he. He used to cut cross ties for the Katy. Put it down anyway, they might pay a little something on it.
When was it? What was it for? How could you pay 65 cents for Important Words?
It must have been back in the summer. He ain't been seen since August when he tipped us on Ned that time.
Was that what you paid him for?
No, Schmidt paid him off on that. I reckon it was cartridges I give him. I give a lot of cartridges away. I cannot recollect every little transaction.
I will date it August 15th.
We can't do that. Make it the 17th of October. Everything on this bunch has to come after the 1st of October. They won't pay behind that. We will date all the old ones ahead a little bit.
You said you haven't seen the man since August.
Let us change the name to Pig Satterfield.